Hi. My name's Luke Skrobowski. I'm a student at Middlesex University in London, working between the philosophy and the visual culture departments there. My paper is entitled All Systems Go, Recovering Hans Hacker's Systems Art. The white cube scored with a grid of infrared beams, photoelectric sensors studding each wall at waist level. Directly above the sensors, roughly at head height, a row of light bulbs. Seven sensors and bulbs per wall. The room empty, the lights off. On your entering the room, however, light. Bulbs come on, illuminating the space. Walking forward, the bulbs no longer aligned with you go off. Bulbs in line come on. A logic is suspected. You test the system, retracing your tracks. Obediently, the lights oblige your expectation, reversing their sequence. A moment of amusement, a moment of empowerment. You are striding around the room now, light at every footfall. Slow, self-generated, stroboscopy. Your body catching its own motion. Environmental feedback, agency conferred on your every action. You're participating, you're making the art. Then, another person enters the white cube and begins on the same short learning curve. Lights switch on and off, you pause. An expression of annoyance flickers across your face. The requirement to share space, recognize another with the same basic skills and claim to their luminescent reward. Contemplation, you suspect new possibilities. Resolution, waiting for an appropriate moment, you catch their eyes, a playful invitation. They catch your hint. Together, you begin an impromptu performance. Awkward at first, soon finding your feet, playing off another's rhythm, having them catch your step and improvise on it, trying to catch lag time in the lights, latency in the system. The gallery momentarily shifts into something other. Light beats time out of space. Another white cube. Here, a black bird with bright yellow stripes around the eyes, sits in a chrome cage. It rocks gently on its perch. Silence. Occasional scrabbling sounds as the bird readjusts its footing. You walk around the cage, maintaining a properly respectful distance from the art object. You're puzzled. This is strange. You wait. Nothing happens. Walk around the cage again. Wait. Nothing happens. You prepare to leave. Suddenly, the caged bird calls out. All systems go, it squawks. And again, all systems go. A pause. All systems go, all systems go. Repetition to inanition. All systems go. So I've just presented two narrative reconstructions of works by Hans Hacker. The first, photoelectric viewer programmed coordinate system, is from 1968, and the second, Norbert, All Systems Go, from just 3 years later, in 71. Norbert, in fact, can only be accessed imaginatively. The bird's reluctance to parrot the phrase and the infamous cancellation of Hacker's Guggenheim show put paid to the piece and prevented this work in progress from ever leaving the studio. Nevertheless, even treated as an unrealized proposal, it can be compared instructively, I think, with Photoelectric. Both works by Hacker were vanguard propositions. Both sought to perform advanced critical work on received notions of artistic agency, the object status of art, the role of the spectator, the frame of the artwork, and the medium of its execution. Yet, though separated by a relatively short interval of time, Photoelectric and Norbert seem ideologically divided. Two questions present themselves. How should we account for this apparent divide? And secondly, what broader ramifications does it have for understanding Hacker's practice and the problematics that his work engages? Technological development and a radical polarization as to how art should relate to it have long inflected critical accounts of the avant-garde. As Andreas Huysen has encapsulated it, technology played a crucial, if not the crucial, role in the avant-garde's attempt to overcome the art-life dichotomy and to make art productive in the transformation of everyday life. And he also suggests, and I quote him, It may actually have been a new experience of technology that sparked the avant-garde, rather than just the imminent development of the artistic forces of production. The two poles of this new experience of technology can be described as the aestheticization of technics on the one hand, since the late 19th century, and the horror of technics inspired by the awesome war machinery of World War I on the other, end quote. So Photoelectric and Norbert could be read in this tradition, and the difference between the two works figured as an ideological break. Harker's move from the aestheticization of technics to a horror, his shift from an affirmative technophilia to a critical technophobia, motivated by a reaction against the war machinery then being deployed by the US government in Vietnam. Such an account might run as follows. While Photoelectric presents a sincere engagement with technology, a play with its prosthetic extension of human powers, this affirmative position is flatly negated by Norbert. In this later work, Norbert Wiener, cybernetics' founding father, is parodied, his optimistic, feedback-steered path of human progress undermined. The affirmative, all systems go, of Photoelectric, becomes, in Norbert, the sardonic refrain of a trained minor bird. All systems go, i.e. run down, no longer fit their intended purpose, fail. Harker starts with emancipation and ends with entropy. Here, Harker would be assimilated to that critical tradition which discerns a neo-avant-garde repetition of the historical avant-garde's attempt to overcome the art-life dichotomy by incorporating the latest technology into artistic practice, an ultimately abortive attempt to relate cultural and industrial production directly. However, in Harker's case, my claim is that such a well-rehearsed reading amounts to little more than a stock response. Harker's art and the complex ways in which it engages techniques cannot be reduced to a neo-recapitulation of the failures of the historical avant-garde. The apparent break between Photoelectric and Norbert is not, in fact, a clean fracture, as becomes clear if we recover the system's theoretical position underlying the elaboration of both works. However, Benjamin Buchloh influentially has insisted on just such a break in Harker's practice. On one side, he places what he designates the mature, i.e. political, works, and on the other, those earlier projects which emphasized physiological, physical, and biological processes, and which often use technology as a means to create or evoke them. Furthermore, Buchloh only endorses the later work, unambiguously dismissing the earlier as positivist scientism. Quoting him, "The final departure of Harker's work from the limitations of a systems aesthetic approach occurs in 1969, when, beginning with his Poles, he transfers his interests from biological and physical systems to social systems that implicate the spectator in an immediate interaction." End quote. In this schema, then, Harker's work with physical systems, such as condensation cube from 63, ice stick from 66, high voltage discharge traveling from 68, as well as his work with biological systems, such as grass cube, live airborne system, and grass grows from 69, grass grows, was apparently superseded by a political turn towards social systems in 69. Yet in fact, Harker continued to explore physical and biological systems in an important series of ecologically concerned works that were executed concurrently with the majority of his more famous Poles. These works include Chickens Hatching, this is from 69, Bowery Seeds, 1970, and that's actually the roof of Harker's studio, a bit of home gardening, Goat Feeding in Woods, 1970, Directed Growth from 70, and finally Rhine Water Purification Plant from 72. And that's a selection. There are additional works as well. I want to argue that the problem with Buchloh's argument runs deeper than its questionable chronology. Rather, his insistence on the artist's departure from the limitations of a systems aesthetic produces the requirement to specify a definitive break in Harker's practice. And I think that's key to note, that the insistence on departure from systems aesthetic leads to this insistence on the break in Harker's practice. In making explicit reference to systems aesthetics, Buchla invokes the theoretical legacy of the curator and critic Jack Burnham. And here you can see Burnham engaging with Harker's news piece, which he put in his software show from 1970 at the Jewish Museum. It's a series of commercial newswire services running kind of endless reams of news into the gallery. Now, Burnham was a friend of Harker's, and until Buchla came to occupy this position, his most significant interpreter. Rejecting formalism, Burnham elaborated a theory of systems aesthetics heavily inflected by his reading of the biologist Ludwig von Bertalanffy's General Systems Theory, which was first published in 1968. Sharing a publisher with Bertalanffy, Burnham had picked up on systems theory as a key part of his broad-ranging attempt to develop a position adequate to a then-emerging post-formalist practice of which Harker's work was exemplary. Burnham did not, in fact, however, generate his theory of systems aesthetics solely by observing Harker's practice. Dan Flavin, Carl Andre, Robert Morris all feature heavily in his account. And he, in fact, nominates Les Levine, an artist less remembered today, as methodologically the most consistent exponent of a systems aesthetic. Nevertheless, Harker's work was undoubtedly central to the development of Burnham's thinking on systems. Quoting Burnham, "As a close friend of Hans Harker since 1962, I observed how the idea of allowing his systems to take root in the real world began to fascinate him more and more, almost to a point of obsession." And Harker openly acknowledges this debt the other way around and has commented in print on the fact that it was Burnham who introduced him to systems analysis. Defining the art of the 1960s remains contentious. The diversity of Anglo-American post-formalist practice has been historicized as a set of discrete movements, including process art, land art, anti-form, conceptual art. Everyone in this room, I'm sure, is more than familiar with the roll call. Yet it is worth remembering that there is considerable overlap between the respective concerns of these so-called movements, emerging as they did in opposition to formalist artistic practice. Running parallel to what is now generally understood under the rubric of post-formalist art was tech art, an artistic tendency advancing the fusion of advanced art and advanced technology. And Rauschenberg's experiments in art and technology operation was perhaps only the most prominent example of this tendency. And here we can see that the choreographer Steve Paxton rigged up a sort of prototype piece for Rauschenberg's open score tennis game, which was performed at the nine evening shows at the Armory, perhaps the high and low points of tech art in the 1960s, both at the same time. Now, such a fusion of art and technology now looks a little clunky, misguidedly teleological, and rather resolutely obsolete. Yet in moving away from the traditional mediums, tech art still conceived itself in opposition to conventional Greenbergian formalist modernism. In the late 1960s, tech art enjoyed as much visibility as other post-formalist practices. And Harker's systems art, defying neat movement boundaries, bounds what can be designated both conceptual art and tech art strategies. Similarly, Burnham sought to develop systems aesthetics as a general theory of artistic production, avoiding movement-specific categorization. Now, whatever the status of Burnham's systems aesthetics as a general theory, it is undoubtedly productive in bringing to light Harker's grounding in systems thinking. Recovering the influence of Burnham's systems aesthetics on Harker's systems art encourages us to understand his practice holistically, revealing a fundamental consistency underlying its stylistic diversity. Harker did not acknowledge any split in his work at the time he started to conduct his polls. Quite the opposite, in fact. Quote, "I now spend more time on things in the social field, but simultaneously I am preparing a large water cycle for the Guggenheim show." They cancelled the Guggenheim show, so we never saw the water cycle, but he was working on it. As Harker's art historical significance gets decided in late career retrospectives, such as the recent Wirklich show in Germany, it is all the more imperative to challenge the long-standing assertion that his practice is ideologically split, neatly divided into a pre-political positivist phase and a later properly political phase. The Critique of systems aesthetics is a positivism. Itself depends on an opposition between the natural and the social that is not historically reflexive, a definitive spacing of these fields as if they were invariant, ideologically undetermined, and ambiguously distinct. Bruno Latour has interrogated exactly this division between the natural and the social in the course of his project to elaborate a political philosophy of nature. He calls for a political ecology where nature is no longer identified as a particular sphere of reality, but recognized as, quote, the result of a political division, of a constitution that separates what is objective and indisputable from what is subjective and disputable. There is then, following Latour, a politics always already operative in the prevailing division of the natural and the social. And Harker's less discussed ecological systems work make this clear. Transplanted moss supported in an artificial climate from 1970, I think could almost be used as a textbook example of Latour's point here. What constitutes the natural and the social in this scene? Where does the natural end and the social begin? Harker is clearly worrying the distinction. Systems thinking allows us to locate a politics in Harker's earlier work, as well as to remark its conceptual continuity with the later. Systems theory offers a way to think the natural and the social analogically, and Harker's art, via his engagement with Burnham's systems aesthetics, makes use of it to do exactly that. As systems scholars William Rash and Kerry Wolfe have summarized it, systems theory makes use of the same formal and dynamic models across what have been viewed traditionally as discrete ontological domains. We can now see that Harker's artistic career constitutes an unbroken series of critical artistic interventions on an ascending scale of systemic complexity, from organic elements through plants, animals, and finally up to humans and their societal system. From physical to biological to social systems, Harker's work demonstrates the overlap and entanglement of the natural and the social, and often uses technology as the instrumental means by which to make his point. Now, systems theory proper has been accused of adopting an organicist and naturalizing stance towards social processes and their attendant antagonisms, and thus of being, at best, apolitical. And while I think there is some truth in such accusations, systems theory is short on political agency. In itself, it has little to say about the world beyond interpreting it. Such criticism nevertheless pays insufficient attention to the uses to which the theory can be put. Systems theory, mediated through Burnham's systems aesthetics, is mobilized by Harker to make artistic interventions which hold real political stakes. Furthermore, the defense of an absolute and ontological distinction between the natural and the social has itself held together a reactionary myth of modernity, as Latour again makes clear. Quote, the moderns have set themselves apart from the pre-moderns. For them, nature and society, signs and things are virtually coextensive. For us, they should never be. End quote. In debunking this myth, systems theory implicitly threatens the perceived achievements of a certain conception of modern rationality. This is why Latour provocatively suggests that we have never been modern. In fact, Buchla's rejection of Burnham's account of Harker's artistic practice anticipates, albeit in considerably restricted scope, Jürgen Habermas's fundamental disagreement with the sociologist and systems theorist Niklas Luhmann on the status of the critical project of modernity. Now, such fundamental philosophical problems won't be decided here. It is even unlikely that they can be, for, as has been pointed out, Habermas and Luhmann operate with mutually exclusive conceptualizations of modernity. While Habermas insists on grounding modern society in the Archimedean point of a rationally motivated consensus, Luhmann's principle of functional differentiation entails the absence of such a center and, by implication, the impossibility of a totalizing consciousness or collective identity on the model of a transcendental subject or of a linguistically grounded intersubjectivity. It is sufficient for our purposes here, then, to mark the controversy and to acknowledge that traditional objections to systems theory as anti-humanist, positivist, technologically determinist, politically suspect, etc., are increasingly less powerful as we enter a historical period in which the boundaries between the individual and the system are increasingly blurred. In this situation, then, opposition must be imminent, implied somehow in the very contradictions of the system. Which brings us back full circle to Harker's practice and his stated determination to enact a critique of the dominant system of beliefs while employing the very mechanisms of that system. Returning then to the question of how to account most convincingly for the relationship between photoelectric and Norbert, it should be clear that the apparent ideological break between these two works is not a clean fracture at all, but rather the articulation of two discrete yet linked systems theoretical investigations. Harker certainly intended Norbert to parody a strain of cybernetic theory dominant in an increasingly technocratic world. But it can be suggested equally plausibly, I think, that the rigid grid of motion sensors and harsh glare of naked light bulbs in photoelectric constituted a clear warning about the advanced surveillance made possible by technological development rather than a technophilic promotion of liberatory play and viewer emancipation. Lured by promises of free interaction, the viewer is in fact ensnared in a highly controlled cell, his or her movement tracked and scrutinized. On this account, participation amounts to no more than the freedom to live out a completely routinized existence. Similarly, the apparently cynical and technophobic exercise of trying to train a minor bird to endlessly announce the principle of entropy can also be rethought. Might there not have been an invitation here, however covert, to free the caged bird? Surely the transgression of opening the cage door and letting the bird escape is a possibility that the piece countenances, particularly when we recall Ten Turtles Set Free from 1970, a work broadly contemporary with Norbert that Harker did realize. Incidentally, if anyone can spot all 10 turtles, they're doing better than I have. Managed to. I'm up to 8. Such an action, then, releasing little Norbert, might constitute a real act of micro-liberation, a symbolically loaded and institutionally unsanctioned ethical choice. Rather than submit to the tedium of passively engaging the piece on its ostensible, institutionally sanctioned terms, the viewer might step in and realign the rules. The system could be opened along with the cage. Furthermore, the individual might even find suggested his or her own potential for emancipation along with Norbert. As Harker insists, works of art, like other products of the consciousness industry, are potentially capable of shaping their consumers' view of the world and of themselves, and may even lead them to act upon that understanding. We shall have cause, therefore, to question readings of Harker's practice as split, readings which seek to locate its politics as emerging only after he has transcended the limits of a system's aesthetic approach. We're now in a position to outline some answers to our initial questions, namely, how should we account for the apparent divide in Harker's work, and what broader ramifications does it have for the problematics that his practice engages? Firstly, then, Harker's work is not divided. There is a fundamental continuity in his practice, namely a rigorous focus on real-time systems. And his early work demonstrates a politics by disrupting the ontology of the natural, staging an antagonistic confrontation with still influential strands of modernity theory. Secondly, in Harker's use of systems theory, we uncover a productive approach to the challenge of relating cultural and industrial production, one which moves beyond the ossified and undialectical opposition, technophilia on the one hand, technophobia on the other, which still inflects the majority of critical accounts of vanguard art's relation to technology even today. Harker's systems art should be recognized as a powerful strain of post-formalist practice, one that makes use of technological resources without sacrificing critical engagement to the modernist fetish of artistic and industrial progress. And I'll conclude by observing that the aesthetic and political challenges of relating cultural and industrial production remains an open problematic. This can be seen in the work of a loosely allied group of contemporary so-called relational artists, whose context-specific practice deals not only with the attenuated social relations attending new forms of capitalist production in the post-industrial West, as has been widely commented on, most significantly by Claire Bishop, who's in the audience and moderating today, but also I'd argue with the technological forces inflecting these relations and shaping their social subjects, which I think has been less commented upon. Here we can see Carsten Hüller's light wall piece installed at his 2001 Synchro System show at the Fondazione Prada. As you can see, it's provoking fiercely relational discussion. The work uses a computer to vary the rate and pattern at which the 3,552 light bulbs flash, inducing hallucinations that destabilize the viewer's perception of the boundary between themselves and the system. And similar engagement with the ramifications of post-industrial technology can be found in the work of Angela Bullock, Kerith Wynne-Evans, Liam Gillick, Pierre Huyghe, Philip Perreño, and others. In fact, Nicolas Bourriaud, infamous theorist of relational art, devotes a key section of his relational aesthetics to today's art and its technological models. Consequently, I want to end with Adorno's enigmatic caution in aesthetic theory, a caution which still has something to offer us today, I think. Quote, "Social reflection on aesthetics habitually neglects the concept of productive force. Yet deeply embedded in the technological processes, this force is the subject congealed as technology." End quote. Just as we can currently see Gordon Matta-Clark explicitly compared to Rikrit Tiruvaneja at David Zwirner here in New York, so I suggest that Harker's systems art constitutes an important, less obvious, and less well-examined line in the conceptual genealogy of ambitious contemporary art. Thank you. Question in the corner.
Norbert Wiener was a child prodigy, a brilliant mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book called The Human Use of Human Beings, in which he warned society of wrongs. I think that that word should have been called The Society That Ignored Norbert, because he warned us.
Yeah, I think, I would agree. I think in a lot of artistic discourse, there's a slight sort of tendency towards reading cybernetics as somehow inherently kind of complicit with the military industrial order or whatever. But in fact, a lot of those scientists had, you know, much more nuanced positions on the social ramifications of their work. Systems theory as well.
Just in the middle. Guy Debord talks about Nazi fascism as national capitalism, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the German printmaking was originated in Germany and evolved into propaganda.
Right.
So it's an interesting thing.
Okay, thank you for the comment.
Just one more question, and then we're going to move to the panel. Okay, hold on. One second.
At the back, by the.
Yeah.
Okay.
You invoked Rashi Bab's example very convincingly, I think, but you could have used him as well as a useful source of inspiration for the so-called heroic painting. Are you familiar with that?
So-called what, sorry? Growing painting, with the mud that then sort of sprouted.
Right, which he did in the 1950s, and which I know Harker was obviously aware of and constitutes a great example. The second example is actually a performance Rauschenberg produced in Minneapolis, if I'm correct, in the 50s, letting out a bunch of tortoises.
Okay,
with
right.
A flashlight attached on the shell of each turtle in the night.
Oh, fantastic. I didn't know that worked.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
direct,
great.
Direct precedent. So. But I just want to ask you a quick question. You, I think, very successfully argue against Buchlo's slightly reductive binary opposition.
Mm-hmm.
However, your most recent example, the most recent example of Harker's work you're referring to is 1972. So how do you see the
subsequent?
Well, exactly. The possible purchase point of systems theory on more recent works.
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think what I was concerned to do was, definitely contest this idea of a break. I mean, Harker has subsequently been very concerned with institutional critique, which I still think is a sort of exploration of societal system. I mean, the latest work, I think, in fact, it's been criticized because it becomes almost rather didactically political, it sort of stars falling off the US flag. I think it actually loses something of the sophistication of the earlier work. So, I mean, I argue that there's a continuity, but I would certainly acknowledge that his focus has become, you know, much narrower. And particularly, I think the way in which institutional critique and responses have played out has, you know, has in a sense guided his subsequent practice.